Thanks for listening to the Revelation Lecture Podcast, an audio service of the Wisconsin Lutheran Seminary Library. For more, please visit www.wls.wells.net. Lecture 2, Part B.
I think Chapter 2 then begins the so-called section on the letters, the seven letters to the seven churches. Before we begin with that, though, I'd like to refer back. I hope that you brought along your outlines from last time. Now, if you look at the, you have a chart where with the seven letters. I think that's page 3, huh, from last time. The seven letters. And I've called your attention to the fact there that the seven letters are again divided into seven parts. On page 4 of this section, remember we had that outline of the whole book that's divided into seven sections. And then 5 of the second seven section are divided into seven parts again. So the book is divided into seven parts, and 5 of these seven parts are divided into seven parts. At least 4 of them for sure, the seven seals, the seven letters, the seven trumpets, the seven seals, the seven trumpets, and the seven vials, they are named that way. The fourth one, the seven visions, is not called the seven visions in the book, but if you go through it, you find that there are 7 distinct visions that are listed there in that section. Now, the seven letters, again, have 7 parts. For the most part, in every one of these letters you have the 7. That's not quite the way to say it. In almost every one of these letters you have 7 distinct parts in the letter. You have, first of all, for every letter, the command to write. Unto the angel of the church of Ephesus write, to the angel of the church of Smyrna write, to the angel of the church of Pergamos write, to the angel of the church of Thyatira write, and so on, Sardis and Philadelphia and Laodicea. That's the first verse in every one of these letters. Then the second verse, the second section is, these things saith he, and then there comes a description of the speaker. And for the most part, those descriptions of the speaker are taken from chapter 1. And we'll look at them in detail when we get to each individual letter. After that, comes the body of the letter, which consists generally of 3 parts. First of all, a word of a criticism, and then, well, 4 parts really, a word of criticism, a word of commendation, not always in the same order, then comes a call to repentance, which goes together with a criticism. There's a criticism and a call to repentance and a word of commendation, and then a promise to those who overcome, that always starts, to him that overcometh will I give. And then comes, finally, the command to hear. He that hath an ear, let him hear, or the call to hear. He that hath an ear, let him hear what the Spirit saith unto the churches. Now, those are the 7 parts. They're not always in the same order. The first part always comes first, to the angel of the church of the congregation write. And then the description of the speaker always comes second. Then the last 2 parts, the promise and the call to hear, are in the same order for 3 letters, and then in the same order for the next 4 letters. So that the call to hear comes in the 6th place in the letter to Ephesus and to Smyrna and to Pergamos, and then it comes in the 7th place in the 4 remaining letters. And the other 3 sections switch back and forth. Now, I said that this is true of most of the letters. There are 2 letters that don't have any criticism. The letter to Smyrna has no criticism. The congregation in Smyrna is not criticized, and the congregation in Philadelphia is not criticized. But with those exceptions, you have those 7 parts in these 7 letters, which I think is interesting, again, from the standpoint of the arrangement of this book, that you not only have the number 7 used so often, but the number 7 is basic for the whole makeup of the book. And that's true, then, also of these individual letters. One other thing I want to say before we go on to the consideration of the letters themselves is this. We talked last time about the various types of interpretation that are used in this book. If you remember, I mentioned the preterist interpretation, the futurist interpretation, the church historical interpretation, and the idealistic interpretation. Now, the futuristic interpretation or the millennialistic interpretation is the one that says the events that are described in the book of Revelation are all events that still lie in the future. They are going to take place shortly before the end of the world. They're going to take place during the 1,007 years that will pass just before the last day. Now, this is true beginning at chapter 4. In chapter 4, they say you have the rapture. And then come the 7 years of great tribulation that are described in the following chapters. Then in chapter 20, you get to the millennium. And then in chapter 20 and 21, you get to eternity. Now, the millennialists also, however, look upon these seven letters as being prophetic. They say the seven letters are the seven ages of church history, whatever that is. I don't know what the seven ages of church history are, or what they're supposed to be, but they say there are seven different periods of church history that are described in the book of Revelation. In the letter to Ephesus, the early church is described. And in the letter to Smyrna, the church of the second or third century is described. Then in the letter to Pergamos, the church of the following centuries is described, and so on, until you get to Laodicea. They say the church in Laodicea, that's the church during the millennium. And that church is going to be made up of all unbelievers. There are going to be no believers in the church of the millennium. That's just going to be a visible church without any Christians in it. But the letter to Philadelphia, which has no criticism in it, they say that's the church just prior to the millennium. That's the church which is going to be here during the time when all the Jews are converted. And they say you have the conversion of all the Jews in the letter to Philadelphia. And I'd just like to have you look at that, because I think that shows you how these people abuse the scriptures. Now in the letter to Philadelphia, that's in chapter 3, beginning at verse 7. In verse 9 it says, I will make those who are of the synagogue of Satan, who claim to be Jews, though they are not, but are liars, I will make them come and fall down at your feet and acknowledge that I have loved you. Now, the millennialists say that at the time of the millennium, all the Jews are going to be converted. All the Jews are going to become Christians. And they say this is the passage that proves that. I will make those who say they are Jews and are not, and I will make them come and worship before your feet and know that I have loved you. That passage is supposed to say, during the time of the Church of Philadelphia, during the Philadelphian time, all the Jews are going to become Christians. Now, if you could get even the conversion of one Jew out of that verse, you're getting more out of it than I can find in it. See, I will make them come and worship before your feet. Worship, that's the King James, which is a little bit misleading for us today. The NIV is better, really. I will come and make them fall down at your feet and acknowledge that I have loved you. Now, I'm going to make the Jews come and fall down at your feet and admit that I have loved you. Does that prove the Jews are going to become Christians? Not one word that in there that would indicate that the Jews would become Christians. Now, as I said, the King James says, worship at your feet. I have trouble lecturing in the NIV because the wording of the King James is so familiar to me that I always go back to that. But worship to us today means to pray to somebody or to give him divine honor. But in King James English, worship means nothing more very often than just to fall down in front of somebody and show him respect, to kneel before somebody. They knelt before kings, and that was called worshiping the king. Now, they did not think of that as being showing divine honor to him, except in some unusual circumstances where they did worship the king. The Romans, for example, were commanded to worship the emperor. But ordinarily, the English word worship only means to kneel down in front of somebody. And that may be kneeling in prayer, or it simply may be a kneeling in respect to someone. The other day, a couple of weeks ago, I read there was an article in the paper about some lady who proposed to a man, and she got down on her knees in front of him when she proposed to him. You'd expect it to be the other way around, but at least she said that's the way she did it. Well, just because she got down on her knees in front of him and asked him to marry her doesn't prove that she was worshiping as one worships God. But in King James English, that would have been called worshiping. So there is nothing at all in these letters that would indicate that this is prophetic. In fact, there's a clear indication in the previous chapter which indicates that this is not prophetic. If you go back to chapter 1, verse 19, it says there, write therefore what you have seen, what is now, and what will take place later. So there are two things that John's going to write about. He's going to write about some things that are now and some things that are going to take place later. Now, at the end of the seven letters, or after the seven letters are over, we get a reference once more to the things which are to come hereafter. Chapter 4, verse 1. After this, in other words, after he had had the seven letters dictated to him, and after he had written the seven letters, then after this I looked, and there before me was a door standing open in heaven. And the voice I had first heard speaking to me like a trumpet said, come up here, and I will show you what must take place after this. Now there are two things John says he's going to talk about. He's going to talk about what is now and what is going to come after this, right? In chapter 4 it says, now I'm going to show you what's going to take place after this. Obviously in chapter 2 and 3 you've got what?
Now.
You've got what is now, right? So John is going to describe the situation as it exists now in the church in these seven letters.